Hello, and welcome to another moment with Eric Fleming. I'm your host, Eric Fleming. And I hope that everyone had a safe, relaxing Memorial Day. I didn't, because I had to work in my regular job, but other than that, it was okay. So if you noticed, I did not do a podcast when normally I try to have them out by Mondays of every week. So this week I decided not to do that. So I had to put it out the following day, the Tuesday. Anyway, appreciate y'all listening to the podcast. Appreciate y'all keeping up with it. Make sure that if you want to interact with me, I'm on just about every social media platform that's out there. So, you know, feel free to do that. I'm also, as I've stated before, trying something new and asking for subscriptions. So you can go to patreon.com/amomentwithericfleming and subscribe to the podcast. As again, I've stated before, this is to try to take the podcast to another level. In order, you know, to make it better for you all. So there's that. And I guess another housekeeping note, this is award season, or the beginning of award season for podcasters. So, you know, we'll be submitting this podcast to the Black Podcast Association again to see, you know, not just the win, but, you know, continue to see the improvement. Black Podcast Association really has been doing a great job in highlighting podcasts by African Americans. And it's really, really important to support them because they're supporting us. And this awards thing is just part of the support, because it actually, you know, helps us as podcasters know how we're doing, because we actually can see how we scored and with the constructive criticism that they may put in the notes or whatever. So, you know, if y'all see BPA or Black Podcast Association, y'all support them, whether you have a podcast or not, because they're doing a great service. And having had the privilege of being a nominee once, I hope that this year we can be a nominee again and have a chance to win. So nonetheless, again, all this is to make sure that this podcast is doing what it's supposed to do. It's at the quality that it needs to be. And, you know, it'll just be a humble honor to have to win that. But anyway, that's personal housekeeping, all that stuff. Anyway, the gist of the podcast today stems off of a political event that happened over the holiday weekend. Well, you know, part of it, right? What kind of made me decide to do it was this and something else, and I'll get into that later. But the political act was the fact that President Biden, Speaker McCarthy, have come to an agreement to raise the debt ceiling, which is a good thing, because we don't need to be in a position where America loses its credit rating and doesn't make payments to veterans and for Social Security recipients and all that stuff, right? And the target date was initially June the 1st, and they pushed it back to June the 5th. Well, that gave them enough time to really come to a compromise. And that's where we are. And for those people who are concerned about a lot of rhetoric that was leading up to it, the worst thing to me is dealing with the SNAP benefits. Now, SNAP, our generation, we call them food stamps, right? But the SNAP program has a work requirement, and there's an age limit to that, right? So I think it's like 45 now. If you're over the age of 45 and you apply for SNAP, you don't have to have a work requirement. And then the work requirement is waived if you qualify under the income guidelines, right? And that's based on how many people are in your household, all that kind of stuff. So now they raised it to 54. So if you're under the age of 55 and you apply for SNAP, you've got to prove, or you got to meet the work requirements. That's what this legislation will do. Outside of that, it basically pushes the debt limit, debt ceiling, 2 years down the road. It freezes spending for next couple of years as far as the amount that we can spend. You know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, there's some Democrats and some Republicans that are not happy with it, which means that it's probably a pretty good compromise. I don't really see anything that's detrimental. It's kind of mundane, to be honest. But it is what it is. And that's really how government is supposed to work. But the news story to me, out of all that, is that people are utterly shocked that this happened. That a compromise was reached. But that's the way government is supposed to function. And it's kind of a sad commentary that people are shocked that government can function. But that's a sign of the times that we are in. You know, and people were critical about President Biden allowing McCarthy to be the person in the press doing all the talking about the progress and the negotiations and all that. But since y'all folks like to bring up his age, let me remind you that Joe Biden's been doing this since 1969. Right. Basically, half of his adult life, he's been in government in the United States Congress or at the White House. So he's old school. He's all about bipartisanship. He's all about negotiating and compromising. And, you know, if he feels he needs to take the back seat, you know, or step, not be in the limelight to get things done, then that's what he's going to do. I mean, they basically worked this thing out while he was at Camp David over the holiday weekend. So, you know, I get it because of the volatility that's been going on. And people don't quite understand how that works, or they've forgotten maybe how it's supposed to work. And like I said, people on both sides, there are some members that are not happy, which means that, okay, it worked out. Because a compromise means not everybody's going to be happy, because not everybody's going to get what they want. But if we're going to move forward, that's the most important thing. Right? So you know, that's kind of where we are with that news story. But again, it triggered something in my mind. And it raised the question. And then there was another event that happened over the past week that has a lot of my fellow podcasters up in arms. And it was really kind of interesting how the dynamic developed, right? Couple of people got on TikTok and videotaped, recorded, I'm dating myself, recorded them being at Target. And Target was preparing for Pride Month, which is June. Pride Month for the LGBTQ community. And these people kept pointing out clothing that had rainbows on them. And especially highlighting the children's clothes. And so they were going in this whole thing about indoctrination. And then, you know, it escalated to the point where people were threatening physical harm to people that work at Target, right? Which forced Target to make a decision, which became unpopular with the LGBTQ community, to tamp down their promotions and tamp down their displays of pride clothing, as you will. And, as other people pointed out, they could have ramped up security or, you know, doubled down on the products that they sell, but they thought it would be better just to say, you know what, we're not going to do it. And that gets me to the question, the compromise with the budget and the acting out of these TikTokers, conservative TikTokers, toward clothes with rainbows on them, which they perceived, you know, to be children's clothes. You know, and their whole argument is indoctrination, right? My question is, why is it okay for white folks to act a fool? Why is that acceptable? Right? And, you know, it wasn't outrageous for the people to express their opinion on TikTok, right? Because there was this one lady who did it who, in response to one of her critics, mentioned that her best friend or one of her best friends is a member of the LGBTQ community, and that friend and her partner were coming over to visit at that particular moment. So I wonder what that conversation was like at the house, because that visitation happened after she went viral at Target. But they're not really the problem. Well, they're the problem in a sense of their opinion and their version of indoctrination, right? But the people that were acting the fool were the ones that were threatening just employees at Target, right? These are people that put on their red uniforms and they go to work every day just like you and I and everybody else. And yet they were being threatened for working at Target. People talking about beating them up or whatever else they wanted to do to them. If they saw somebody with a Target shirt on or whatever, they were going to jump them. That's the acting the fool part, right? Going into the store and throwing stuff on the ground and, you know, physically damaging displays. And I don't know if any of these people had any repercussions. They should have. You know, especially if they videotaped it. They should be suffering some kind of repercussions, even if it's just a misdemeanor offense. You just can't go up in people's stores and tear stuff up just because you don't like the product that they're selling, right? Far be it for any of us. And, you know, I can say people of color in general, but I'm talking about black folks. Far be it for any of us to do anything like that. Right? You know, I'm old enough to remember. You know, people talk about the LA riots, right? After Rodney King was beaten, video was shown worldwide, and then those officers got acquitted, and basically that's when the uprising, riot, whatever phraseology you want to use. My politically correct friends will say uprising, but you know, you tearing up your own stuff. It is what it is, right? And that, and there's a reason why I'm dealing with the semantics. Because to me, a true uprising means that you're going up against the people who did this to you, right? You don't tear up your own community. You go to the other community. That to me is an uprising, right? Or people have enacted a curfew and you have decided to go after the authorities that's trying to enforce the curfew. That's more of an uprising than just being mad or being happy. And I'll highlight that point in a minute. And tearing up your own stuff, right? Vandalizing and looting your own community stores. And I know I'll get some flack for that, and that's fine. But, you know, I think we, when we see people marching, protesting, that's more of an uprising. When it gets to the point of violence, it all depends then on who the target of the violence is. To me, to define what uprising is. But nonetheless, the real reason, well, the Rodney King thing was actually the last straw. Because those of you who remember, there was an incident prior to the Rodney King arrest and beating where a young black girl went into a store that was owned by an Asian person, I want to say Korean. And the girl was trying to buy the orange juice, and the lady was, before she got to the counter, the lady was accusing her of trying to steal the orange juice. They got into an argument, and the store owner killed the girl, shot and killed the girl. A lot of people forgot about that, right? But those folks in LA did not during that time. And so that's why there was a lot of tension between the Asian or AAPI and the Black community in Los Angeles during that time because of that shooting. And when the violence happened after the Rodney King verdict, or lack thereof, right? Those officers were acquitted. A lot of those stores that were damaged were Asian owned. You know, it prompted people to put on the boards Black owned and all that stuff when they boarded up the windows, you know, try to stop folks from going into their store, but didn't necessarily protect them. Right. But just the fact that, you know, we have to have this dance and discussion when Black folks do stuff, whether it's an uprising or a riot and all that. That's really just on us. When white folks do it, don't nobody really say nothing. Well, I shouldn't say that. People say stuff, but it's okay. You feel what I'm saying? It's mainstreamed. It's accepted. And the reason why I wanted to point out like riot, because for example, whenever, you know, in a major sporting event happens in the United States and a particular city, you know, team from a particular city wins the title. And let's just say it's a city that, or a team that hasn't won a title or even ever, or hasn't won in a long time. The people who are out in the street and they're celebrating. But the celebration leads to street signs being ripped off and cars being vandalized, and set on fire, windows broken, fights, you know, just total mayhem. They call those riots. And that's what it is. It's definitely not an uprising, right? It's a riot. But when they show that on the news, it's not like, oh, that's despicable behavior. Oh, and society should do better and all that stuff. It's like, oh, those people are celebrating a victory in this championship. Right? And we as American society has just kind of accepted that. And most of the people that are doing this stuff are white people. They're the ones downtown, you know, outside of these bars, outside the stadiums where the team normally plays. You know, when it really gets crazy, for example, it's like their home team, their team wins the championship, but they win it on the road. They don't win it in their home stadium or in the Super Bowl, which is in a neutral site. That's when you usually see those folks acting foolish like that. Sometimes the folks, if the team wins at home, they'll file out the stadium and stay around and then do stuff. But most of the time, the team is not even in town and they're celebrating. And then it escalates to a riot. And people accept that. People take that as, okay, this is where we are. But if Black folks did that, or when Black folks do that, it's a problem. White folks do it for joy. Right? Black folks do it because harm has been done. And although I'm not encouraging vandalizing and tearing up stuff and all that, by far I'm not doing that. It seems to me that we've decided that people who are upset because of an event or a tragedy has happened are terrible people. And people who do it out of joy are cool. Right? So why is it okay for white folks to act a fool? That's my question. And, you know, the cherry on top of all of this is January 6th. But folks were really acting foolish leading up to January 6th and have been acting foolish since then. Right? And we've accepted that as normal American politics. So let me put a pin on that and I'll catch y'all on the other side. All right, and we are back. So the foolishness of January 6th, right? The climbing of the scaffolds, the storming of the Capitol building, the vandalizing, the defecation, the attack on eventual murder of police officers, right, has been, in some circles, glorified and made to seem like it was a normal act of political expression, or to have one congressman say just a normal day of tourists at the Capitol, right? And you got those legislators going to see the people that are still in jail for doing that, calling them political prisoners. These folks have organized a choir. I guess they're recording songs now. I don't know. I don't remember any of these politicians doing that when black folks were being arrested at any period of time, right? And I guess these folks are trying to compare themselves to the folks of the 60s, because that's the civil rights veterans who were getting arrested for, you know, protesting Jim Crow laws. And they got arrested and they were housed like in livestock barns and other places where they could hold mass numbers of people, especially in the South. Yeah, you know, they were like, you know, they were singing songs and, you know, gospel songs and all that, freedom songs, we call them. So I guess these folks have decided that that's the avenue they're going to take. They, you know, but they don't get it. You know, you had people who were being oppressed against people who didn't like the outcome of a particular election. Totally different scenario. And no equivocation. There's no balance in that. And it seems from this point forward, because we accepted these white folks acting a fool on January 6th, that it's giving more credence to people that are elected to act a fool, right? You got the president giving a State Union address. You know, when Obama was president, he gave a State Union address and one member yelled out, Congress pretty much beat that dude down. You know, they censored him. They did everything they could do other than kick him out, right? They basically said, that's not how we act here. Joe Biden gives a State of the Union address. They have several members, female members even, yelling, screaming during his speech. No repercussions at all for that. That's allowing people and accepting people to act a fool. And now, of course, social media is even bigger than it was 10, 20 years ago. So these folks get to act a fool on a daily basis, interacting with their constituents or whatever audience that they've accumulated, all the followers that they have, right? By acting a fool. No decorum, no sense of responsibility. Just blurting stuff out, contradicting themselves on a daily basis, throwing out false accusations about people, creating controversies when nobody really cares about them except them, and then defending the reprehensible, right? That in politics is acting a fool. And I just can't imagine being in a body where people are allowed to act like that and nothing happens to them. They're allowed to do what they want to do. Which is why when the U.S. government does function normally and we reach a compromise on a serious issue or dilemma that's before the country, people are shocked. People are like stunned that that actually happened. That's backwards. Normal things should stay in the realm of normal, and crazy things, foolish things, should stay in the realm of foolishness. But we flip that around. And it's to the detriment of primarily people of color. More specifically, black folks. Because these people want to always bring up the summer of 2020. Because that's the most recent thing in their memory as far as black protest. And anyone say, oh, you know, they did this and, you know, police officers got killed and da, 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 da. And everybody condemned the ones that killed the police officers. There's no black politician that I know of showing up at the trials of these people or in the jail cells of these people, praying with them, holding hands with them, singing with them. That's not what we were doing. Or any black people. I don't know. I don't I don't remember anything like that. It's like these people committed crimes, high crimes. They murdered police officers. And they were arrested. They've been indicted and been convicted, from what I understand. If they didn't go to trial, they pled, right? Guilty. But no black politician was embracing them. No black politician was putting them on any of their social media platforms or radio talk shows or whatever. Nobody was doing that. Definitely not going to the jail to visit them. They weren't doing it. But you flip it over, and these folks that invaded the United States Capitol, you have white politicians that feel comfortable enough to go to the jails where they are and pray with them and sing with them. Like, it's okay. We understand why you did what you did. We applaud you for that. And I know it's not a universal thing that people have accepted it. There have been folks, especially in the white community, who have been critical of these people. Right? But these are the white people you expect. These are the people that have a different political ideology than the folks that are doing that. Right? In the black community, it doesn't matter what your political ideology is. If you do something heinous, you're not going to see a black Republican or a black Democrat show up. You know, the only way you would get black support is if the community feels that that person was not the person who actually did the crime. That's when you will see protests and uprising, right? But usually when we protest and uprise, is because one of us has been killed. That's when we usually are doing it. Harm has been inflicted on us. And it's driven by, our anger is driven by grief. But even at that, the most recent thing, 11-year-old boy gets shot by a black police officer in Mississippi, in Indianola, Mississippi. Black folks weren't tearing up stuff in Indianola. They weren't. Now, they were protesting. They were marching. They've got an attorney, pretty good one. And they're going after the city of Indianola and trying to get this guy fired. You know, even though Indianola says he's one of the best police officers they have in the department. And he may have been at a time, but at that moment when he shot a kid who was the one who actually called 911, he wasn't Indianola's best at that point. Nonetheless, thank God the kid is alive, but the parents and everybody in the community are upset about that. But they're not tearing Indianola up. They're not rioting, but they're protesting. But there are white folks that are upset about that. Not just Indianola, but because Indianola is primarily a black town now. But, you know, the white folks that are there, they're not happy with, oh, you know, you got to support the police and that's a tough job and yada, yada, yada. You know, people get upset when they see black people protesting. White people get uncomfortable when they see black people protesting. And that's 400 plus years of angst toward that. But when white people protest, it's supposed to be okay. Especially if their protests get out of hand. Well, you have to understand their emotions. So why are white people allowed to act a fool and nobody else is? I have a theory. It's called white supremacy. It's called racism. It's called racial preference, if you want to use a softer term. But the bottom line is, because in a country where it is designed for people of a certain race to have more advantages than everybody else, that includes behavior. It's okay for a Marjorie Taylor Greene to act a fool. But if a Jamal Bowman decides that he wants to speak out about something, he's a threat. You understand? When black people decide that they're going to take a stand against anything, they're a threat to the order of society. But when white people do it, it is what it is. That's really how white supremacy is allowed to survive. Because they're allowed to go into stores like Target and tear up stuff. They're allowed to buy Budweiser and Bud Light and smash it with their cars. It's just ultimate dumb protest. You're going to buy the product that you want to boycott just to smash it. But that's their logic, right? You want to boycott it, but you're going to buy the product to show that you're boycotting it. That level of stupidity is accepted, right? Because these people are white. And to me, if it's not okay, if you have discomfort with black people marching in the streets, protesting, and occasionally raising the level to violent acts of looting and hurting other people, if you're upset about that, then you should be upset when white folks do it. And you shouldn't reward people who think that it's okay with positions of power and influence. I mean, everybody's got their own following. I get that. But to me, in a normal society, it should never rise to 50% or above. Most people want to say, well, you know, he or she does things. Yeah, I don't agree with the tactics, but, you know, they're good people. That's what they say about white folks. Black folks are totally judged by the image that they portray, the tactics, right? Al Sharpton is, you know, they say he's, what are the terms they use for him? He takes advantage of situations. He's a race baiter. He stirs up stuff. You know, they have all these negative connotations about him. But a Marjorie Taylor Greene, it's okay. A Lauren Boebert, it's okay. A Matt Gaetz, it's okay. Andrew Clyde, it's okay. Donald Trump, it's really okay. Right? These people make excuses for bad behavior. And Donald Trump, for example, is so used to exhibiting bad behavior that now he's, even when people are starting to call him out on it, he's doubling down by using the argument, y'all seemed to like it before, while all of a sudden y'all got a problem now. Case in point, he just got hit with $5 million for defaming somebody, and then the next day continues to defame that same person. And he's given an hour to himself on a major news network to express his views. That's accepting people acting a fool. That's mainstreaming people acting a fool. That's legitimizing people acting a fool. And if we're going to move forward in this nation, then we got to stop looking at events like budget negotiations as aberrations and stop looking at foolishness as normal. But the only way we're really going to get there, the only way we're really going to guarantee that there's some new normal in America is that we've got to end white supremacy in the country. We got to end that mindset. We got to end that true terror that is plagued this nation and has held this nation back from being really the model nation that it purports itself to be. And, you know, some people might say, well, Eric, that seems pretty simplistic. It's not. Because the complex thing is getting rid of the white supremacy. It's just like a person where you tell them they have lung cancer and it's been caused by them smoking cigarettes. And then they don't want to stop smoking cigarettes. They refuse to stop smoking cigarettes. You've diagnosed what the problem is. You even have a solution of how to deal with the problem. But if the folks are not willing to take the steps to get to the solution, that's when it gets complex. Because really there's no other way around to get the solution if the folks are not willing to deal with what caused the problem in the first place. Right? So that's why we allow people in America to act a fool. Certain people. White people. Because we live in a society that gives them a privilege to do what they want to do. And, you know, people look at that and say, well, you know, they're just outspoken. But if a black person ever dared to do the same thing, oh, they're a pariah. Right? We've heard that. I've heard that all my life. Most black people have been here, have heard that all their lives. Some have lived longer than me, some not as much, but they all hear the same thing. And the reality is, until we commit to addressing white supremacy, which, you know, to be honest, people are starting to get it, and it's going to take time, maybe even generations, to totally eradicate it, but the foundation has to be laid now. There has to be a commitment now. It has to be taught. And that gets to this point about indoctrination. The real people who are trying to indoctrinate our children are the people who are trying to keep white supremacy alive. Make no mistake about it. In order to teach a human being how to kill another human being, you have to desensitize them. It's the same way with being racist. It's the same way of being discriminatory. You have to desensitize a person toward other people. Because the less human you make them, the easier it is to look down upon them and feel that you have dominion over them. Right? Now, those of us in the Christian faith are taught that we have dominion of the earth, meaning that we have dominion over a fallen angel. Right? That's Satan. That's what the Bible teaches us. But in human nature, we think that we have to devalue another human being so that we could have dominion over them and do what we want to do without their interference. Right? That's the premise of white supremacy. And they use the lack of melanin in their skin as a weapon, as an asset to determine who has privilege and who doesn't. So, you know, people are acting like they're surprised when they see Latinos or blacks or Asians promoting white supremacist ideals. In their mind, they want to be with the winners. And if they see that white supremacy is ruling the land, then they want to be on that team. They don't want to be on the team that's getting beat down and oppressed. They want to be human. They want to be respected. So they're going to affiliate with the group that they think is getting the most respect. So that it shouldn't be a surprise to people that there's a fraction of folks of color that ascribe to that kind of sentiment. But the only way that you're going to fix that is that you got to get rid of that notion altogether. You've got to shut it down. And until you shut it down, it's going to get worse before it gets better. It's kind of like that crazy notion that Scott Atlas had, that we have to have this herd immunity in order for us to be able to survive and tolerate COVID. That's pretty much what folks are trying to do with white supremacy. They want to normalize it. They've been doing it, really. And then when we are awakened, when it consciously, and we see that the world is not composed like that, nor was it intended to be composed like that, then it's a problem. Hence, banning books. This podcast is basically giving folks permission to not tolerate white people acting a fool anymore. Bottom line. We have to be vocal. We have to be active. We have to be united in shutting that down and making people understand that that foolishness is not acceptable in this country anymore. And it has to be a coalition of people of color and white folk. It's beyond time for this kind of behavior, this kind of anarchy to be tolerated. And if people unite and say, we're not going to tolerate you acting a fool anymore, then I guarantee you America will be in the right direction. Until next time.